Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North with your hosts, David Haw and Dan Weiderer.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Welcome to the Take the North podcast. I'm David Haw from the Mullion Haw Show on 670 and Score. Dan Weiderer from the Chicago Tribune, still at Lucas Oil Stadium. And the Bears, 21-16 losers to the Indianapolis Colts, the winless Colts, who came into the game the worst run defense in the NFL, hold the Bears to 63 yards rushing on 28 carries. The story of the game and the Bears' inability to score touchdowns. And frankly, Dan, this was one of those games that, as I wrote on 670score.com, and I'm sure that you had similar sentiments, it's one of those games that all the things that you thought about the Bears coming into this season that were responsible for a lot of the hype and high expectations, you left this game feeling like you were questioning everything.
Yeah, I said for the viewers in Chicago, it was hard to determine whether this felt awfully familiar or familiarly awful, right? It was that kind of moment here at Lucas Oil Stadium, David. I'm still trying to wrap my brains around all of the trapdoor levers that the Bears basically opened beneath their own feet. You played a game today against a very average opponent that didn't play very well, and you basically found a way to lose. This was undeniably a losing effort. There were bad turnovers. There were terrible penalties. There were bad coaching decisions. There were miscues left, right, and center. And you're going to have to go into a cleanup effort here in week four with the noise amplifying. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a handful of silver linings and positive moments to grasp within this loss today. But this is supposed to be a team that's making progress towards becoming a playoff contender. And when you look across the division and you see what the Packers did today, and you see what the Lions did today, and you see what the Vikings did against the very same Houston Texans team that just beat you last Sunday night, you realize you have a very small margin for error. And when you're going to make that many errors, you're going to walk out a loser more Sundays than not.
Well put. I think it makes you feel a little silly if you went into this season believing in the Bears' ability to be a playoff caliber team, to be the coach that got over, you know, cleared the hurdle last year, that hired the right offensive coordinator, that's got the generational quarterback, that's got all the pieces that you see, and they can win more than they lose. And then you're like, you watch this today, and I know it's the NFL, and frankly, next week could be an entirely different scenario. And you're like, oh, wow. But there was nothing that happened today that made you feel good about the way that you viewed this team heading into this season. And we could have a power rankings of those you doubt the most or who lost most credibility today. I think it would start with Shane Waldron. It would go to Matt Eberflus. It would go to the offensive line. Somewhere on that list is probably Caleb Williams, even though I think that his last 20 to 25 throws were NFL caliber throws and looked like a modern passing game. But Dan, pick a topic and you could find somebody that you doubt and something about this team that you question.
I'll give you a little peek behind the curtain here post-game. We leave the locker room. We leave the post-game press conferences and Colleen Kane and I are kind of trying to divvy up all of the wreckage that we have to account for at ChicagoTribune.com. And she decided to just kind of make a checklist of the massive errors that contributed to this loss. I focused almost exclusively on the Bears' inability to score from inside the 5-yard line and most notably from the 1-yard line on fourth and goal. And you just have a recipe for losing football. And we're supposed to be beyond this at this point. We're not supposed to be cooking up losing football, you know, and that's what the Bears did today. And that play, David, I imagine in your viewing experience in live action and then in the 4 minutes that follow, you're just left scratching your head till it's raw, trying to figure out why something as easy as scoring from the 1-yard line has a degree of difficulty that the Bears seem to give it more often than they should.
They definitely do that. And it was not just the fourth down call. It was the third down call. And how many consecutive snaps did they go from the shotgun formation inside the red zone? How many times have they done that? Whether it's Matt Nagy or Luke Getsy or Shane Waldron or insert dumb offensive coordinator here, it just continues to be an issue that I don't understand. Let's go to that fourth and one. That is to me as damning of a sequence as you're going to find from a coaching perspective. And it was something I even saw a post game. You tell me what they said in the locker room, but there
yeah,
was some questions.
I'm happy to detail this.
Yeah, go ahead. It was the wrong call. It was an option play. I felt like I was watching Arkansas and Texas in 1982. It wasn't what you called for an NFL team trying to get into the end zone when they're 3 feet away.
You're trying too hard to play chess. And so the Colts are in their goal line personnel, and they're in their big people personnel, and they've got six linemen up front, and you're trying to take advantage of that in a way where you get your speed guy, DeAndre Swift, out on the edge. In principle, I understand it, okay? And if you block it up properly, it's a touchdown. Braxton Jones does a bad job of diverting. I think it was Tyquan Lewis coming off the edge, who the Bears were expecting to crash down on that play. And then he can't get to the second level to pick off Zaire Franklin, the linebacker. And so all of a sudden, there's a freeze frame here, David, where Caleb Williams' option pitch is in the air to DeAndre Swift. And four of the Bears' offensive linemen have already spilled to the turf. And so by the time DeAndre Swift gets his hands on the football, four of his blockers are on the ground. Okay, like you are not going to get anything done in the NFL in that regard. Now, the other part of this is, okay, I understand what you're trying to accomplish. You know, you see something there and you go after it. It's 1 yard. There are people in Chicago like myself who grew up in the 1980s and understand that you get a big push up front. And if you have to have your running back jump over the top of the pile, have him jump over the top of the pile. Just do something to get some forward momentum toward the line of scrimmage, rather than a rookie quarterback in an evolving offense with a work in progress running game trying to run the speed option to the left. You know, was the execution clean? It was not. Are the Bears ready to start trying that stuff with the state their offense is in? They are not. And so you can question every single thing within that. Coleman Shelton and a small group of reporters after the game, I asked him, I said, what would it have taken on that play for it to have clicked the way you guys envisioned? And he said, I don't know, for there not to be a defense. And it was sort of this damning comment of like, you know, like we've got to find something better. Now, listen, the Bears have two running plays called on that situation. And Caleb Williams has the authority to alert to something different if he sees what he called an extra overhang defender to the left side on that play. He also indicated in a follow-up question to Mark Potash that when they broke the huddle, there was less than 10 seconds on the play clock, and he didn't want to get up to the line of scrimmage in a noisy environment and start trying to alert to a different run and risk getting a delay of game penalty from the 1 yard line. He says, you call it, you run it, and you go execute it. They didn't do it properly. And so you walked out of that possession without points after possessing the ball for 16 plays. You walked out of the first half after having six possessions, 47 plays, and 247 yards scoreless. I can't wrap my brains around that at all, how the Bears walked into halftime with 0 points today with the way this game was flowing.
It was one of, I think, several egregious coaching mistakes. That fourth and one call, which fourth and goal from the one, obviously that was the wrong call at that time. I also think you can point to on your list of things that you and Colleen came up with, please get an answer about why Matt Eberflus was so caught up in the Roma Dunze getting his first career touchdown maybe, or who was going to keep the game ball from that, I don't know, where he called for one. The replay showed it. He called for one, and then he called for two, and then, oh, why? I can't do that because we have the one team out there that's going to kick the extra point, and wait, timeout. You waste a timeout. You know what's worse than wasting a timeout? Losing all confidence that you know exactly what you're doing or that you have a clue on Sunday afternoon because you're paid handsomely to have a clue. So that was the other one, Dan. I know that, you know, they take the timeout. They don't score anyway, so it didn't even pay off. But just to be in that situation, you know how it works in Chicago. You know how it works in any NFL city. When you have a head coach that openly exposed, that unprepared for that moment, it's going to leave a mark.
Get ready. Get ready. I mean, that's inexcusable situational awareness. It's unfathomable. I'm sitting in the press box with a bird's eye view, and you know that when the Bears score, it's going to be 14-9. Caleb Williams hits Roma Dunze, and all of a sudden we're watching Cairo Santos and Torrey Taylor sprint off the sideline, and you're going, well, what the conversation in the press box in the moment is, what are they doing here?
Right.
Then they have to use a timeout, a fourth quarter timeout in a close game that you're going to need as you try to put together a rally from behind yet again. It is mind-blowing to have that type of operational sloppiness. Matt Eberflus owned it after the game. He said, it's on the coaches. We have to be better there. We have to be ahead of it. From the people upstairs to the people down on the sideline, we all collectively have to be sharper there. Inexcusable, right? And so this is part of the checklist of inexcusable stuff. And so that's where we are right now after these last two losses to the Texans and the Colts. It's not the result. It's the form. It's what they're showing, you know, in the way they're playing and the way they're performing that leaves you to believe they're not prepared yet to go to the next level of NFL competition.
One more play. I got to get off my chest before we, this is just the reaction one, right? So we're just going to talk about the details tomorrow.
Let's go.
But fourth and two, you've got one job. If you are the punt return team, you've got one job. If you are on the field on fourth and short, And an offside penalty will result in the drive being kept alive. Fourth and two, you can't have a neutral zone infraction. You can't have encroachment. Which is it, Dan? It's the dumbest name of a penalty I've ever heard of. Are you encroaching their space? But so anyway, whatever happened, you can't let it happen. And that falls at the feet of the coaches. It's not fair that it does, but the lack of discipline does. And that was a team in the midst of a free fall, showing a lack of discipline. And what did the Colts do 6 plays after that? Of course, they scored a touchdown.
Yeah, you turn a 3-and-out into a touchdown, right? Losing football. And there's a theme here. There's a common thread running through all these things, David. And it's like, how can we find a way to lose? And the Bears did so in that moment. You got gifts all over the place today from Anthony Richardson, who gift-wrapped 2 interceptions to you, to the officials who were making some calls early that allowed you to stay alive in a football game that you might have been on the verge of getting beat soundly in. And you capitalized on almost none of them. You know, and that moment there, the neutral zone infraction that you're referring to on Daniel Hardy, it's a game losing play. And this is a guy who made a game winning play in week one. And yet these types of things occur at untimely moments, and they leave us in the same conversation. And I think that's where the newcomers to Alice Hall have to understand what the old timers like you and I have experienced. It's just a different way to repeat the same history, and you just kind of exhausted by it all because you should be past it by now.
And you thought we would be past it by now. That was the thing about this season that made it feel a little bit different. This offseason felt a little bit more worthy of the expectations, all because Caleb Williams was here. So we need to address him briefly. 33 completions. What was it? 52 attempts. Sacked 4 times. They called 56 passes against the worst run defense in the NFL. How does that happen? But that's another story. So Caleb Williams threw the 2 picks. Can't do that. He had some good moments. He fired it with authority. I think there was up and down. He had big numbers that don't necessarily reflect maybe exactly what happened because there were some things that were concerning. The accuracy is surprising to me. The inaccuracy, I should say, Dan. That's the one thing I did not expect. So he's got a ways to go. He had some good moments. He had some shaky moments. He's been a little bit more shaky than I expected, not going to lie. But he's also one of those guys, when you start to make a list of things you're concerned about, he's probably further down than what we'll talk about this week on the air and around town. But he's got things that concern you, but he also did some things that maybe excite you.
60 passing plays called. That includes a scramble, 4 sacks, and 2 pass interference penalties and a roughing the passer penalty that they got in there. That's a lot of passing plays called. Obviously, some of that gets situational in the end of the game when you're playing from behind and you have to pass. But even late in the first half, I think they were at a point where it was 24 passes called and 18 runs called. And again, you have to stick with the run. You have to stick with it until it gets unlocked. And the Bears haven't been able to do either thing. They haven't been able to stick with it. And they haven't been able to get it unlocked. That's a problem 3 weeks into the season when you don't have an identity as a rushing offense, particularly against, again, a vulnerable Colts run defense that you documented gave up 474 in the first 2 games. Each of their first 2 opponents rushed for more than 200, and the Bears walk out of here with 63 rushing yards on 28 attempts. That's an average of 2.3 per carry. Like, not good enough. Like, ugly. You have to figure out a way to get things done. And it was exemplified on that goal-to-goal situation where, you know, again, you talk about running out of shotgun. The first play from first and goal from the 4 is a direct snap to Khalil Herbert.
Why do you do that?
Why don't you have bread and butter running plays in your playbook where you say, look, like we're going to get under center. We're going to trust our quarterback to be able to take a under center exchange and turn around and hand it to a running back. And we've got a fullback. We sometimes play 13 personnel on the field and we're going to pound it and we're going to push this football over the goal line, push it. I don't know, work on something to get that 1 yard, but there just seems to be a lot of different things being tried and nothing's really working. And you don't seem to have any bread and butter in your running game. Matty Berflus expressed after the game that he was content with the commitment to the run. I'd push back on that firmly and say, man, like I didn't see a steadfast commitment to the running game at all. Again, by the way, DeForest Buckner not playing today on injured reserve, and the Bears still had did nothing to move the Colts up front.
Remarkable pile of nothing. So, all right, let's bring in studs, get some of these three-word reviews before we get out of here. We could be here all night talking about what went wrong for the Bears. We'll be back tomorrow because the Bears will be back tomorrow. That's a more of a threat than is a promise. By the way, everyone's going to say, well, you know what? They're going to be – the next three opponents are beatable. That's what they're saying about the Bears.
Oh, of course.
The Bears coming up. That's the get-well game for every one of those three teams. The Rams.
Listen, the Rams just came back and beat the 49ers. So that's not a pushover team.
No, it's not a pushover team. Congratulations to the Baltimore Ravens. They just beat the Cowboys. All right, studs, three-word reviews. Because you know what? The Ravens know how to win. I know they're 1-2. That's a team that knows how to win. Pittsburgh Steelers, we're going to hear that all week. Justin Fields is 3-0. Yeah, give him his due. He's 3-0. Mike Tomlin knows how to win. These guys know how to win. The Bears, clueless. Go ahead, studs.
You sure you're done? You're good? All right.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Three-word reviews. Quite a bit of responses to your tweet today, Dan. Last I checked here, 392 responses. So if you want to keep responding, go ahead. At Dan Wiederer on Twitter. But anyway, got a few good ones here. Fluce misspelled hits. That comes from Dan Durkin, who's a great Twitter follow, by the way, if you guys don't follow him. Need better coaching. 1 yard short. Absolute complete incompetence. Bitter or typical Bears game. Excuse me. And let me see here. We got our first fire, Matt Eberflus, one of the season, I believe. Flus ain't it. Sick of it. Play caller problems. No run game. Same old Bears. Do you guys want me to keep going, or do you guys get the theme?
That's pretty good. Listen, guys, I'll tell you something here. Brad Biggs says to me in the right before we went in the locker room, he said, remember, this is supposed to be the easy portion of the Bears' schedule. The back half of their schedule is an absolute gauntlet from what it looks like. And so you're sitting here again.
That's what I love about Biggsy. You know, he's always looking at the glass half full.
Always trying to find the light at the end of the tunnel. But I mean, think about that, David. Again, like this we talked about it on Thursday, that this was a should win game and a must play well moment for the Bears, and they didn't either. They didn't win and they didn't play well. Look, I'm going to tell you this, like a couple things on the Caleb Williams front. Number one, when you watch the All-22 of the strip sack, you are going to be sick to your stomach that Cole Kmet didn't do a better job of handling Leatu Latu, because Roma Dunze is coming out open over the middle for what's going to be about a 30-yard gain to start what could be a fourth quarter go-ahead touchdown drive. You know what I mean? Like that's the moment you're in, and Cole Kmet was exposed in that situation. I know you're going to say, like, why do you have a tight end blocking there? They had a 7-man protection in to block 4 rushers.
How did it work then? Was it just a perfect storm? How does Cole Kmet end up on the one pass rusher that you know is dangerous when he's on the field, if he's healthy, and the guy you can't get a head of steam? How does a tight end end up one-on-one on that guy?
I mean, you just have to use good technique there. I mean, you've got Mercedes Lewis and Cole Kmet attached to the left side of that formation, and you just weren't able to get it done there. I also think I'm eager to get back into some of the video. It's going to be a longer watch because the Bears, again, they called 60 pass plays. But there were some really nice things that Caleb Williams did today where you say, okay, he's going to be fine. The unfortunate part is he's dropped into a season that has hope attached to it. You know, and again, we talked about this in August, that this is a very weird dynamic where you are surrounded by help that should help you press forward. But it also creates a little bit of urgency that a lot of, highly drafted quarterbacks don't face in the first month of their rookie season, where you can do some good stuff, but the loss feels heavier than it probably should for a rookie. And so his ability to kind of steady himself after these last two losses is going to be something to keep an eye on. And we'll see where he goes going forward. Again, Rams and Panthers the next 2 weeks. By the way, the Panthers, revitalized with the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton playing quarterback. They're due to visit Soldier Field in 2 weeks. If you want a lever loss, we talk about lever loss, those losses that drop the bottom out of a season. How about losing to Andy Dalton and the Panthers at home in 2 weeks? Just chew on that hypothetical.
That would be something. It's going to be a grudge match game for him, one of his former teams against for whom he threw 300 yards passing, right? He had 300-yard passing day for the Bears. That's probably next week's storyline. All right, so you know what you described about the Panthers as a lever game feels like that's what today was for the Colts, because all of this, I know that we have been doing all these very happy, feel-good podcasts. We're all like, you know, optimistic and all that stuff. Feels like it just vanished today. Feels like, you're right, what you just said about we've been watching these kind of games for a very long time, and we kind of sense that this was, we hoped that, I think, or just expected it to be different this year. Newsflash, it's not different this year. How did you say it coming in? I hope you use this line in the Tribune, and I hope they didn't edit it out somewhere. It's awfully familiar.
Awfully familiar or familiarly or awful,
familiarly
right?
Like, awful. Excellent. You must be a writer or something. So, all right. We got plenty more to get to this week. The quarterback breakdown is going to take forever. We may have to add another segment. 60 pass plays called. Goodness sakes. Shane Waldron segment is going to be something. But anything else, Dan? Either in the locker room, post game, around the Lucas Oil Stadium.
Yeah, just reviewing my notes here. I mean, I guess we can get this tomorrow. Caleb wore the wristband today for the first time to help him in a road environment, learning some stuff. I mean, there's a lot of layers to this. But again,
it was all caps, HELP! Exclamation point. That was. You want to know what was on his wristband? It was that.
And you'll feel good about some of the things that Dunze did today. You'll feel good about the Bears involving Cole Kmet in the passing game. Ultimately, though, you got to stop making so many catastrophic mistakes. There were way too many today. They walk out of here in a one-score game. They lose again. And now, again, David, you know how it works. You're the first guy on the air on Monday morning. The noise is going to be loud. It's going to be loud. And that's the environment you're going to have to operate in if you're the Bears. We'll see how they handle it.
And we'll be there 5:30 to 10, the Mullinghaus Show on 670 The Score. Read Dan's column in the Chicago Tribune on chicagotribune.com. You can check mine out on 670thescore.com. Plenty to say tonight, and we'll have plenty to say all week long. We'll drop another episode on Tuesday morning. Stay with us right here on the Take the North podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can watch us on 670 The Score's YouTube page. For Adam Sadinski, our producer, Dan Weider from the Chicago Tribune, I'm David Haw from the Mullinghaus Show. We'll talk to you next time.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.